Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for joining us today. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news, but if you want to jot the phone number down, that's 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue, and as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest. Just a programming note, next Tuesday we're expecting county commissioners are scheduled to be here on the Tuesday Talk Show, so mark that on your calendar. In the meantime, from the county staff today, we're welcoming the county legal counsel, Wally Hicks. Wally, it's been a long time you've been in the studio.
It has, Chuck. I know it. I appreciate you bringing me back, and it's always a real honor.
All right. Well, glad to have you here with us. County legal counsel, now that can conjure up a lot of different images in a lot of people's minds. What is your job, really?
Yeah, so the county legal counsel in Josephine County and actually throughout Oregon and probably even throughout the U.S. works for the community as a whole. It's not just working for the government. The office is part of the government, but the client is everyone and everything contained within the county. And so that's what I do. I don't provide advice or guidance for people seeking individual legal guidance, but for matters that pertain to the community as a whole, that's where I fit in and where our office fits in. And of course, most often that does include advising the government on the various topics.
All right. Basically, you're not a representative legally for the county commissioners individually. You're really a guidance counselor for the county. Is that fair?
I think a friend and helper to
friend,
the county.
Friend and helper.
Yes,
okay.
I think that's where I fit in. And you know, the county government is actually quite larger than just a certain number of jobs of people doing at the top or the more prominent jobs. I mean, there's over 300 people working for the county, and all of which have access to our office. Not all of them need access all the time, but you know, we deal with people doing all sorts of jobs within the county government, and we also interact with the public in certain ways as well. And so, yeah, it's not just people doing a certain job with the county commissioner or being elected official or a department head. It's people throughout the organization that we try our best to help.
All right. In what manner? How, you know, if I'm in personnel and I come up to you and say, here's my situation. It depends on the situation, I imagine. But is that something you could take on and protect that person particularly, or is it the protection of the county that really falls on your shoulders?
Yeah, it's always the protection of the county, the protection of the organization. And I think it's become deeply ingrained throughout, I'm going to call it pretty much every pocket of the government at this point. The protection of the public treasury is a top-level mission for everyone in the governmental organization of Josephine County. There's 300-plus people, and I'm satisfied become a culture of protection regarding the public treasury. And so as a measure of that, people come to our office, and we encourage people to come to our office if they think in any way that that the county's interests could be jeopardized. And we try always to do our part to protect and to help others do that as well.
What's your biggest challenge so far?
So the biggest challenge so far, where does one begin?
Are there many?
there always are. There are many. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to tell you this, Chuck. So I think that we have seen, not just in Josephine County, but in jurisdictions throughout Oregon, probably throughout, you know, the rest of the country, an uptick in people who are pursuing litigation against government entities, local jurisdictions, cities, counties, districts, and people who are threatening litigation. And if I may philosophize for a minute, I think that patriotism is kind of on a downtrend right now, you know, for various factors. And that just feeds the incentive to say, well, I'm gonna get into a litigation posture with a local jurisdiction. And so we're constantly trying to fend against that and trying to foresee it. Actually, I guess that's the biggest challenge at the moment, is trying to foresee the trends of where, you know, litigious parties are going to come from and what they're going to allege, and try to prevent that option from being made available.
Yeah, this, to your term of patriotism, this country is as divided as I remember it in my decades of living, about 40 decades right here in Josephine County. So that being said, let me pull one up here that I'm sure that you've dealt with here before when you're talking about protecting the county, and that's the American Mineral Research suit that had just been resolved. Is that correct?
It is, sure. Uh-huh. And of course, now I'm going to be very guarded whenever we do talk about topics that deal with litigation. So, I'm just going to say for the moment that, pursuant to, court order in a settled lawsuit, the, application is going to be considered formally by the Board of County Commissioners, this Thursday. And there's a decision deadline of, the end of August that the, county is going to be required to abide.
All right. Just by way of letting the people know, there was a lease application on locally owned mineral research property that AMR, American Mineral Research, wanted the commissioners to review, and they did not review it earlier. A different board that is on right now. Is that a fair assessment of what has happened to date?
No. Well, I'm not. Not gonna get into the paraphrasing of the past on this. We're just gonna
just wanted the people know what we were talking about.
Sure. Yeah. And litigation did occur, and so that's what we're following up on the wake of the litigation at this point.
All right. So you're trying to protect the county against litigation. Do you have to anticipate? How do you look? How do you look down the road and say, you know, what's coming here? What is the next one that really could hurt this county?
Sure. So when we look at certainly the trends of, so when, before people file litigation, they have to inform the government formally, through a notice of claim. And, so we look at what the trends are. And of course, a lot of those people just don't follow up on, but we can always follow both within Josephine County and within our peers, you know, throughout the state, where the trends seem to be going. And, you know, looking at state government too, and I do have a good sense of what the trends are, but I'm not really inclined to kind of lay them all out for the general public consumption.
Flags out to anybody,
I don't. So I guess, and that's another challenge of the job, is to be guarded about what I say. And of course, it's a unique challenge being in an elected position, in that you know, as an elected official, I need to be responsive to the public and to the electorate to the maximum extent possible, and so I try to keep that balance as best I can.
All right. Have you had any feedback as to your performance from the public?
Absolutely. And, you know, when people, and it goes both ways. So, you know, it's tempting to say, when people,
sometimes you're a good guy, sometimes you're a bad
guy. That's right. To say when people have a problem with you, they have no hesitation to say so. But I've found it to be, it goes both ways. In my case, I've gotten a lot of positive, feedback as well. And a lot of times, you know, I've said it maybe before here, but I like to say it from time to time, and that in a way, the best government is the one you never hear about. And I know that as a journalist, that's not going to be your favorite message there, but I do think that there's value in that statement, in that, you know, if people aren't really noticing what you're doing, then you're probably, if
I'm bored, I'm happy.
If you're bored, you're happy. Sure. Okay. Sure. And so I think there's value in that.
All right. The city has just come through that injunction by the disability situation here. And that has been ongoing for years for the city of Grants Pass. But the county seems to be fairly immune to that. Are there homeless situations throughout the county that you're dealing with as a legal counsel?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There are, and it manifests a little bit differently, in the county. You know, we see, sort of larger, land tracts that have been, abandoned, by the owners. Maybe it's an absentee owner. Maybe the owner died, and we see, you know, homeless people move on to these actual, you know, private properties and stay there. And it becomes a pretty complicated scenario, to try and address it. Why does the county move into those kind of scenarios? Well, typically the neighbors, are pretty unhappy about what's going on. And so, for lack of a better option, the county has traditionally, weighed in pursuant to court, guidance and orders to try and address those situations. So there's a little bit of a unique posture from the county's perspective, as opposed to how the city has to contend with homelessness. But certainly the county has had homelessness on public spaces as well. And we have in the past certainly, you know, worked to clear that up and had some success.
All right. Where are you in the ladder of dealing with that right now? Because I would imagine, first of all, it's complaint driven. So it would go to probably some county staff initially to investigate maybe then to the sheriff's department. Where do you fit in that scenario?
Sure. To paint a little bit more of a perspective, I often discourage people from characterizing code enforcement as complaint driven. It's not inaccurate to say that, and it's not the rest of the story either. So
we're going to get the rest of the story here.
You're going to get the rest of the story here. Yes. So everyone's going to be educated when talking about enforcement. Okay. So, you know, you've got, planning, and that's every county in the state and cities have those, departments as well. And typically, a planning violation is going to be, you don't have a permit for that structure kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And typically that is going to be complaint driven. And what traditionally happens on that, is that the complaint will be recorded by the planning department, and they may or may not, and lately they haven't been, they haven't had capacity to, actually go out and inspect and investigate. So it will go on the record of that property. And then when someone goes to approach the planning department, whether they're thinking about buying the property, whether they're thinking about getting a development permit, then that, flag will appear on the property record from the planning department's perspective. And, they'll require that the complaint be addressed, whether it be through getting a development permit or clarifying that there is no violation. So we have that brand of complaint driven, code enforcement. So then we have the brand that's a little bit more public, which tends to be solid waste enforcement. Mm-hmm. And let me know, are we running up against our time?
No, you're
here?
Fine.
Okay,
you're
got
fine.
Got it. So then we have,
I'll ring a bell or something.
Okay, thank you. So then we got solid waste enforcement, which is technically a separate channel, and that traditionally has not necessarily been complaint driven. That can come in from any number of sources. It could come in from people in the government even that see what they perceive to be a violation. Typically, they do come in from the neighbors, but solid waste is a derivative of public health, of sanitation, and so it's approached by the code in that manner, and had been for a long time approached by the county in that respect as well. And so, you know, when you have like a an unlawful marijuana grow, typically there's a considerable amount of both unlawful structures, you know, do you have a permit for that kind of violations, and also the solid waste that just inherently goes with these messy operations. And so, as a combined approach, the county had been sending in both kind of code enforcement arms. The solid waste, not necessarily complaint driven by citizens, and had been absolutely essential in terms of getting properties cleaned up.
All right. Since you brought up those illegal marijuana grows, and we hear that property forfeiture might be part of the situation after all of those unlicensed buildings and the solid waste on those properties, does that land on your desk? Are you the first step to securing that property for the county? How does that work, and what's transpired to date so far? Because we know there are several out there.
The main thing that's transpired is we had a decision by the State Court of Appeals, which significantly changed the options available to the county.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, Yamhill County case. And so the civil forfeiture that had been, really more of a factor during what we could call the marijuana wars of 6-7 years ago, is not what it was then. Today is not the option that it was then. And so, not to encourage anybody, because enforcement inevitably will reach the bad actors if they're thinking about doing something illegal. But the civil enforcement has, chiefly because of that decision, has not been something we've been pursuing.
All right. With almost every press release we get on illegal marijuana grow bust, it says that you may face legal forfeiture of the property.
And that's probably because when the sheriff's office, state police work with the feds, then the feds do have a different option for property forfeiture.
So it would be outside the county and be a federal forfeiture.
Yes, and we interact with the federal U.S. Attorney's office on those cases, and those do happen. So there is still that specter that if this was a joint operation, including federal authorities, and the feds take a lead in a manner that allows for them to pursue property forfeiture, then yeah, that could still happen.
So is it owned then by the federal government?
Yeah, then it goes to the federal ownership. The county, after a certain process, does get a portion of the proceeds if and when they go and sell the property in turn.
But that doesn't happen overnight, does it? It's a long process, isn't it?
Long process. Yeah.
I mean, years we're talking.
It isn't. I mean, federal prosecutions in general tend to be long process.
All right. Are there any in the bag right now?
Yeah.
Any being pursued?
Yes, I think so. Yes. Yes, but I'm going to leave that one alone.
Oh, he's careful. He's walking a tightrope.
I'm walking a tightrope.
And we appreciate that. We expected that. Still, there's some questions we needed to ask.
Sure.
Moving along, you were part of the negotiations with the library, and I know that's about to come to fruition also. Is there anything you can tell us about that negotiation or where it stands now?
Well, I have been committed along the way to communicating with the library entirely through their counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to continue to abide that.
So that's lawyer to lawyer then?
Yes, from my perspective it is. Yeah. And so, and this would be effectively sending a message outside of that channel if I were to start talking too much about that today.
All right. Well, I'm just trying to anticipate some of the questions we may get.
Absolutely.
And we'll get those out of the way. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more with the County Legal Counsel, Wally Hicks.
Planning your own addition for extra.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress right now. County Legal Counsel Wally Hicks is in a topic that we just kind of brushed on earlier. It is homelessness, and it's still a situation for the county right now. What is the county really looking at here, Wally?
Yeah, so what we're looking at is trying to address the helping to address the problem in a macro sense, and I think that I have a little bit of glimmer of hope here for people who are listening for what the future may hold and whether we could ever improve the situation as a whole. So what's happened recently was this last legislative session, the legislature passed House Bill 2005, and that addresses the definition for civil commitment, and of course persons who are homeless. A lot of times they do grapple with serious mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the legislature has done after a long process, many years process, that was spearheaded by our own Judge Pat Wolke and a team of individuals who've been working for 10 or more years to get this done, was they clarified the law regarding civil commitment, meaning getting people treatment, court-ordered mental health treatment. So they clarified that in a way that I think we're going to see a meaningful increase in people actually getting included within the mental health system. And again, the nexus there with homelessness is quite straightforward. Now, we combine that with a reform that occurred about 10 years ago, actually, Judge Wolke and some others, including myself, when I was in the legislature, worked and successfully got past assisted outpatient commitment. So meaning that we're not just talking about sending persons with serious persistent mental illness to an inpatient hospital setting, but actually an outpatient setting. And so we see these two working in concert with each other, that we could start seeing some court-ordered and supervised mental health treatment. And then, I'd like to also just add another component to that. So I wrote a letter into the editor of the Courier 2 years ago or so, proposing what I called paid family reconciliation, and effectively what that would do would take the foster family template and apply it to public space dwelling adults, and effectively say that if the state wants to provide nuclear or extended families with an economic incentive to reclaim their members from the street, there would be a matching emotional incentive in many cases by those members to participate in such things as mental health treatment in order to continue living with their kin. And in exchange for some meaningful payment from the state, nuclear or extended families would be responsible for ensuring there is a residence, enforcing participation in addiction recovery, sustaining mental health treatment, insisting on gainful employment, and complying with basic rules that are required to remain within the family fold. And so, again, we would call that paid family reconciliation. One of the local prominent local businesses really took that up as a cause in the last legislative session and tried to get some support for a pilot program along those lines. So if we start seeing these general trends come together, I do anticipate we could see a meaningful way to address homelessness that just hasn't been available up to this point.
Well, you mentioned court-ordered treatment.
Yes.
Both inpatient and outpatient situations?
That's right.
All right. How would that work locally? Because we see a constant revolving door at the jail, people coming in, certainly with drug situations, in one day, and they're right out the next, and usually arrested the next day for doing the same thing. Is that the situation that we're looking at if there is a mental situation there? And when we say court-ordered, they would go into a facility. Do we have facilities available?
Mm-hmm. So we're especially going to be, I think, shifting, or if we're going to do this deliberately, shifting into the outpatient kind of model. Ideally, you know, if we can get a situation where people's families can take them back in, and it's probably going to take some incentive, to do so and some support to do so, then we can see people coming off of the street, going back into their families, getting that treatment that they need. So it's not going to happen overnight, but I think it's an avenue to pursue. So the district attorney's office, handles the civil commitments when they do occur, and they're tricky cases. Pretty much every time. And there's a lot more to the homelessness question, especially in regards to the criminal justice system. Remember, someone only goes to jail if they're suspected of having committed a crime. And if they do go to jail and they are charged with committing a crime, they have to be able to aid and assist in their own defense. That's a constitutional requirement, or it's derived by the courts as a constitutional requirement. And so, you know, we see a lot of people that get the crime charged by the police, they get a case brought against them by the district attorney's office, and then they get kind of diverted into typically the inpatient mental health treatment system of the state, and that's been a struggling system for just decades, I'd say. And so shifting out of that channel, which is not the recommended way to go, I think the consensus definitely has upheld that at this point. Shifting it into another channel through means such as this is the best option available.
All right. Let me just see if I can pull up an example here. An adult child who might be suffering from a drug addiction or certainly a drug habit could be placed back into their home with a little remuneration from the state.
If the family will take them back.
If the family will take them back. And I imagine there have to be certain criteria around both situations, both the family and the adult coming back into the family.
Absolutely.
Is all this in place now?
No, it's not. So two of these factors are in place. So I presented basically three factors here. We've got the assisted outpatient commitment, right? And that's been in place for 10 or more years probably. Mm-hmm. And now we have this new measure, House Bill 2005, which clarifies in a helpful way what the standard for civil commitment is. And so we got those two factors. And we have this third paid family reconciliation proposal, which is not in place. But I know it has certainly gotten some attention by people in Salem who advocate. And so if we could, you know, return that concept to the legislature and get people on that wavelength, then I think we could start seeing some progress.
All that sounds very good and promising at the end, but just as a casual observer, I can see lots of different holes. First of all, starting with the DA, who doesn't have time to deal with all of these individual incarcerations from people who have committed crimes, even felony-level crimes, and they're out in a day or two just because of overcrowding, or the DA does not have the personnel or the time to deal with that particular infraction.
Yeah, no, another layer down on that that whole piece, which is, okay, so if someone is charged, with a crime, incarcerated, and then assigned defense counsel, has the option, if they have a sense that the person is unable to aid and assist in their own defense, of, getting a mental health examination done on the defendant. And then if based on the examination, the court rules that the defendant doesn't have the ability to aid and assist in their own defense, typically they do go to the state hospital and they stay there for a certain amount of time until the mental health providers estimate that they would be able to come back and resume the prosecution. But now even this gets more complicated in the federal court. Has ruled in the past 6 months or so that the state's approach to that process has been constitutionally inadequate.
I certainly appreciate your expertise on this and explaining some things to us here that we hadn't heard of before. But in the meantime, how does that affect Josephine County and your job?
So Well, the again, the homelessness factor is
The homeless factor.
Yeah, that's just to focus on that piece. For now, you know, our office doesn't handle the civil commitments. That's district attorney's office who handles that and the aid and assist. So they really have a closer nexus on that level. But we deal with people whether they're committing crimes or not, and it's both on private property and on public. And it typically just comes down to how much of a danger are they presenting to the people around them, the properties around them, and the people in the community.
All right. So if I have a neighbor that situation is occurring, who do I call? Who are you going to call?
Yep. At this point, call code enforcement over at planning.
That's the first step.
It is. It is. Now, with that having been said, in our new basis of knowledge, in that when we're talking about a code violation, we're not always we need to understand that we're not always talking about the you have a permit for that brand of code violation. It's confirmed that we're talking about, you know, either solid waste violation or unlawful occupancy, more people on a property than are allowed to be there kind of a violation. And it'll get channeled in that respect. And, the county is changing its approach where it's in a moment of flux in terms of how that's being approached at the moment. So rather than speculate on where things are headed, suffice to say that's the option that's available to people at this point in time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have in studio right now County Legal Counsel Wally Hicks. We'll take a little break. We'll be back right after the news. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO, Grants Pass.
When I found out I was pregnant.
Welcome back to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Phone lines are open. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Wally Hicks, today, then the phone number is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the current thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest live. In the meantime, County Legal Counsel Wally Hicks, it's been an interesting first 30 minutes of the program. Thank you very much for your insights, and we've got more to go. Because let's talk about some of the things that you also may be involved in as the county council. And that's, well, a lot of the county is funded by timber sales. What's the situation with that, and how are you dealing with it? What is your responsibility?
Yeah, so we do work quite a lot with our timber office, and there's been a lot of activity there. It's all, of course, driven by the larger economic picture, home building trends and, you know, interest rates. Can people afford to buy homes? Can people afford to buy wood products in general? But I can tell you it's a healthy program, and one of the pieces of evidence of that is, you know, the recent purchase of a $6 million parcel in Clatsop County. And so, you know, take a step back. I mean, it's impressive that our timber program had the kind of capital that it could bring to that kind of an option, and then had the vision to actually find the best property purchase option they could, which wasn't in Josephine County. It was in a place where it's expected that the trees grow faster and the fires come less frequently.
When I saw that happen, I was really surprised that we reached outside of our own county to make that land purchase for the timber. Is that unusual in Oregon?
It's unusual. It's unusual.
So we're a trendsetter?
You're a trendsetter. You are. And this is all with a mind toward maximizing revenue into the county programs. And so I'm optimistic about that option. I'm optimistic about, you know, the timber program as a whole. Again, it is subject to some of the whims of the general economic trends, but I do see that as a bright spot in terms of the county government.
All right, so we expect that to make a significant return to the county coffers. How long will it take to turn around, or is that out of your bailiwick?
It's every year. Every year, the county realizes revenue from timber sales. And here's an important point about timber sales to maybe enhance the discussion that surrounds this topic a little bit. And so it's tempting to think and to say that if one were to sell a piece of timber property, lease a piece of timber property, well, that money can go to fund law enforcement. And it's not incorrect to say that, selling or leasing timber property can go to law enforcement. But the rest of that story consists of this, is that so when property has been designated formally by the Board of County Commissioners as some forestry property, which is a statutory status, the conveyance, meaning the sale, the lease of that property, can only go into basically the timber property reserve. reserve. So it can't go directly from that sale into the sheriff's budget, for example. But where the sheriff's budget potentially does connect with timber, the timber program, is that when the timber program sells, when it harvests and, you know, sells trees, then it is at the county's discretion as to whether to send that to, law enforcement or other, or the county programs. And right now it isn't going to the sheriff's office, but it could. And so it's not incorrect to say that, you know, if you sell a piece of property, you lease a piece of forestry property, that will fund law enforcement. But it's really fully correct to say that if you realize profit from that transaction, and then you buy another piece of property from which timber is harvested, then yes, the revenue from that harvest of just the trees, if you will, could go in, if the Board of Commissioners should so decide, could go to fund law enforcement at that point.
All right. Now, let's jump into this just a little bit deeper. Well, at least let's go down that particular rabbit hole here, because you've got to deal with your county forester. You've got to deal with the commission. How does your office fit in with that? Are you just making sure the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed? Or what is the legal counsel's responsibilities in terms of timber sales?
Yeah, so legal – okay, yeah, we do – actually, we do vet the timber sale contracts. We also vet sale arrangements, contracts, and legal documentation whenever property transfers and conveyances are occurring. And usually it's a purchase or a sale of a forestry designated property. You know, legal oversees the property management program. There's actually 4.5 positions total in the legal office. There's 2 attorneys, myself and, mm-hmm. and my assistant, both full time. And then there's 1.5 paralegal positions that are full time. So it's 2 people, but one person's working mm-hmm. half time. And then there's the property management position, which focuses entirely on these types of property issues and transactions. And so, and we provide support through all those avenues. You know, making sure the paperwork is appropriate and drafting paperwork. Work and you know, kind of assisting the timber program in its property transactions.
Right. Do we not have a sheriff's sale coming up soon?
We do.
Oh, okay. When
we
is that? And where the property come from? What kind of revenues are we anticipating?
Okay. So we have a sheriff's sale coming up, and I was at the office this morning talking to our property manager, and she mentioned, oh, can you mention the sheriff's sale? I thought, absolutely. I need to do that. So it's actually Wednesday, September 17th at 10 a.m. So bids are due. It's a sealed bid auction, so bids are due at 4 p.m. prior to that. Okay, where'd the property come from? Here's a story for you.
Okay, that's what we're looking for.
Well, you're going to get a story.
The rest of the story.
You're going to get the rest of the story, Chuck. All right, so what happened was, you know, traditionally from, you know, time immemorial, counties have been required to take possession of properties when the owners don't pay the property taxes, and people have a number of years to make good on that, and if they don't do it over the course of several years, then the county is required to take actual possession. And this is all overseen by the courts in the foreclosure process, but the court then orders the property into county ownership. Okay. Now, up until about 2 years ago, when the U.S. Supreme Court came out with a landmark ruling called Tyler v. Hennepin County, the counties of Oregon and certain other states had been keeping the surplus proceeds, meaning that if the person only owed, let's say, $1, in an extreme example of taxes, yeah, they didn't pay because maybe they didn't realize they owned it. It was an estate. This is often what happens. You know, the property owner dies and then the heirs don't realize they own the property or owe the taxes and nobody pays it and it goes into the county ownership. So let's say they owed $1, okay? Now, up until the Supreme Court ruling, Tyler, the county could sell that property at auction for $100,000 and keep all that profit. And that's over. Those days are done. So the U.S. Supreme Court in Tyler v. Hennepin County stated that counties can no longer retain the surplus proceeds of tax foreclosed real property sales. So what we've seen happen throughout, you know, Oregon, especially and probably throughout America, is the minimum bid price at these sheriff's auctions has been dramatically reduced. And I mean, I'm just looking at
basically
some examples.
It's for the delinquent taxes. Is that what I'm hearing?
It is basically just for delinquent taxes. And if there's a surplus on top of that, then it goes back to the prior owner. So this is a landmark property rights case.
Mm-hmm. It's not a revenue stream for the county.
It's no longer a revenue stream for the county. And so what we have here is a real downward trend, not just Josephine County, but throughout, you know, the state and probably elsewhere too, in the minimum bid price. And I mean, I've got our auction list here, and I mean, coming up, we have what, 18 properties, I think. And you can buy 40 acres of forest commercial for $17,000 is the minimum bid, 40 acres of serpentine for $17,000. We got 30.9 acres of woodlot resource for $60,000. And you don't have to have the full cash amount if it's over 20,000. So up to 20,000, it has to be full cash. But other than that, it's 20% down. And so if somebody likes that, wants to buy 30 acres of woodlot resource and wants to put down a minimum bid of 60,000, the 12,000 is all they need to actually have at the time of closing the sale contract. And then the rest can go on a payment plan of at a 9% interest rate. So it's designed to get people to go and refinance that at the soonest opportunity. But so we just start looking at this list and seeing some real buying opportunities for anyone out there who's interested in getting into the real property market for probably one of the best prices they're going to find.
Sounds like a great buy if you're interested and can handle that kind of situation. And once again, that will just repay the delinquent taxes to the county, but it'll also get it back on the tax rolls, won't it?
That it will, and off of the county's liability roster.
Ah, okay.
So we have a double advantage going on there.
Let's talk about that, the county's liability, because I imagine insurance is pretty high for the liability situation that we face. Yeah. Is that something that you deal with on a daily basis?
We interact with our insurance carrier, City County Insurance Service, which is entirely a government insurance company, and we interact with them almost daily. Now I don't directly administer the contract. We have had a time when our office has administered the contract, but that's been sent over to the Human Resources office at the moment. So certainly, yeah, we interact routinely with insurance. What happens when the county is sued and it's a tort action, meaning that essentially someone has alleged a certain brand of damage and wrong that they've suffered, is that will generally qualify for insurance coverage. And the insurance company, CIS, will assign counsel through their process to actually handle the lawsuit. So we provide a supporting role in those occasions.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for listening. We're not done yet, but we're just going to take a deep breath, pay some bills, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Number to call. We still have time for a call or two at 541-472-1270. Now, this talk show has always been a situation where we're looking for information to inform the public, to tell them what's going on in the county and the city. And it has always been described internally here as a non-controversial, non-adversarial situation, but sometimes you do have to ask a tough question. So I'm going to go back a little bit in history and ask Mr. Hicks if he was involved in any salary negotiations involving Mr. Sellers at the beginning of this current board's administration. So that's the question, Wally.
And there is an answer. That having been said, what I can say today is that rather than lend toward a litigation scenario or cause anyone to interpret that there's an avenue for litigation, I'm going to pass on elaborating on that point.
All right. Had to ask the question or I would have been taken to the woodshed.
Sure.
In the meantime, there's lots more going in the county that you're dealing with in a situation here right now. Let's talk about law enforcement. We've dealt with the sheriff before a little bit here. Are you involved with the sheriff department at all?
I am. Sure.
I would imagine you are.
Yeah.
So what is that situation and how do you deal with that particular area?
Okay. So yeah, what we do, I mean, there's the, typically questions of administration, can come down and, you know, sheriff's office deals with inmates, in the jail. And, you know, there's a lot of, laws surrounding, that set up. And of course, inmates, virtually all of them have lawyers or access to lawyers. And so, we can see, we can see some trends in litigation or litigation threats coming out of that source. But also we get questions in terms of general administration, sometimes grant compliance questions, and we get questions regarding concealed handgun licenses, firearms relief, and stuff of that nature. And we do get some regarding when the sheriff is engaged in an enforcement action and there's something unusual about it, if they're in the field and they think that there's a litigation scenario that they could be encountering, then I'll get called about that.
Well, let's point out here, you're not a prosecutor. That
nope.
That is not your area of there. That's not your job description at all. Moreover, you're looking to protect probably the deputies from litigation. Is that fair?
That is fair.
Okay.
One thing about the sheriff's office, too, that I'd like people to take a step back and consider. So, you know, we do have the law enforcement district in place, and that's pretty unique within Oregon. Mm-hmm. And it can be argued that we have some of the most secure funding available to the Josephine County Sheriff's Office of anyone in the state. And so when people look at, you know, the status of sheriff's office and law enforcement in Josephine County, it's about as stable as it's ever been.
People voted for an additional tax, and that's unusual here in this county.
Very unusual, but it happened. Mm-hmm. And so I think people should be you know, recognizant of that we have actually a pretty advantageous funding scenario regarding the sheriff's office at this point in time.
All right. And I'm not sure this is in your bailiwick, but looking ahead, because I know the jail was designed for a significant capacity that it is not up to just because of funding and resources. Is there any way in the near future or in the far future that jail would be operating at optimum?
At full capacity?
At full capacity.
I do have an answer for that. But again, so we do see the inmate population as being a source of litigation trends, we'll say. And so because it is so scrutinized, how, you know, adults in custody is what they're technically called, can be, interacted with and can be retained, that's another one I gotta say I'm not going to elaborate on too much, lest someone think that there's cause for bringing an action.
Okay. All right. So you didn't get the rest of that story, but stay tuned.
Right.
We're getting down to about our last 5 or 6 minutes here, Wally. Are there areas that we haven't asked about that people need to know about your office?
There sure are. So, you know, I'm going to keep going here on some of the issues that maybe haven't gotten so much attention, but deserve a mention. So, the county is, along with nine other counties in Oregon, participating in the lawsuits against certain pharmaceutical companies regarding the opioid epidemic.
Oh.
And the county has already realized significant settlement proceeds coming in from that effort. And we're not alone. There's certain deals that have been made to settle these cases that have also included the city of Grants Pass, for example, though they were not a litigant, and other counties that weren't litigants. But we've seen, maybe $500,000-$600,000. Don't quote me on that, but it's something on that scale already come in that's solely going to be devoted. No, it's already being devoted toward the cause of abating the opioid epidemic.
And all right, so it's all earmarked for specific areas.
It is earmarked for specific areas, and you know our office participates directly in that effort to garner those settlements in concert with our other counties and see that those funds are turned around and used for that good cause. We have the Fairgrounds Trust Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be based on the $9 million in revenue that is in the process of being realized from the sale of the county of the Flying Lark. There's $5 million that has come in already and some funding in addition to that. And then there's the rest of the payment is scheduled to come in here in the future. But what that is designed to do is create essentially a trust fund for the fairgrounds, and per ordinance, the county can only spend the earnings from that trust, but it's going to be a significant amount of money. And so I think once we start seeing the projects at the fairgrounds really get underway and seeing that master plan get implemented, it's going to be a very exciting time for the fairgrounds and to be in Josephine County and to have that kind of a facility available to us. So I didn't want to let that drop too far off of people's radar. The county, the board is has pending before it an ordinance regarding marijuana, marijuana licensure, and this is a huge, huge turn from where things were, you know, back during what I've called the marijuana wars of, you know, some years back. In that this would, if passed in its present form, be consistent with state law in that it limits the number of licensed marijuana operations, it puts a cap on them. And the whole point there is to, you know, we're in Oregon, and so we're going to have licensed marijuana. Well, let's enable the licensed operators to follow the law and to do so in a way that economically drives the unlicensed black market operators out of this community. So we have a current effort underway to really put a final period on the marijuana wars and the effort to get.
So we have a new ordinance coming up.
Yeah, it's being considered. It's gone through the Rural Planning Commission, and it's going in front of the Board of Commissioners for consideration.
How soon?
I don't have that off the top of my head, but soon.
Soon.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Probably next couple of weeks, but I don't have the date off the top of my head.
We don't know where it is on the agenda yet.
No. Correct. But it has been put on the agenda.
Okay. Good.
Last I heard. And then we also have a home restoration program, and the point of contact there is our office in legal property management. It's based on a federal grant, community development block grant that basically enables homeowners and I don't know about occupants, but certainly homeowners to apply for money that they can then use to fix their homes in a way that makes them more habitable. And so it's a program that has been in place already for about 2 years. We just got renewed, or about to be renewed, I guess, on the federal funding source for that. And so so if people are curious about the home restoration grant program, then call legal and we'll get them started on that process.
All right. Well, if I call legal, what do I call? You got a phone number?
I sure do. Yep. I'll say it twice. So it's 541-474-5226. And again, legal counsel's office, 541-474-5226.
In radio, we say three times is the key.
541-474-5226.
Got about a minute left. Wally, what do I need to know about your office that we haven't said?
We're our office is at a place where we work hard, but we have the right people doing the right kind of work, and there's no doubt in my mind that that we're a very efficient operation, and I'm just extremely pleased with the people that they're in our office and the work they're doing, and I'm pleased as well just with the county team as a whole. There's hundreds of people on the county team. And you take them all together, and it's we're doing really well in this community.
All right. Thank you very much. County Legal Counsel Wally Hicks here on the Tuesday Talk Show. You're listening to KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.